This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast for Thursday, April 6th. I'm Curtis Fox. On today's podcast, a portrait of the poet Samuel Menashe. Never heard of Samuel Menashe? Not surprising, since for most of his career he's labored in obscurity, at least in this country. Part of the reason for that may be that the type of poetry Menashe writes is not in fashion. It's very short, for one, and aphoristic. Think Emily Dickinson, but not quite so chatty. In 2004, the Poetry Foundation awarded Menashe the first neglected Master's Award, and with the Library of America, published a collection of his poems. Here's a quick example of a typical Menashe poem. It's called Rue, and it's read by Michael Stuhlbarg.
For what I did and did not do, and do without in my old age, rue, not rage against that night we go into, sets me straight on what to do before I die. Sit in the shade, look at the sky.
Today we're spending some time with Samuel Menashe to find out more about the type of man who writes that kind of poetry. Producer Emily Botine went to visit him in his Coldwater flat in Lower Manhattan.
To meet Samuel Menashe, be prepared to walk. First, you trudge upstairs, 5 flights.
1.
Take it easy.
Menashe is well aware that most visitors aren't used to the stairs.
Come into my parlor.
Which is also the kitchen. Or is it? It's hard to tell in here. The stove and the bathtub are in the first room you enter, but the half-size refrigerator and the huge grapefruit tree?
It's very ungainly. It takes up a lot of room and...
It must be like 7...
I guess so, but it's easier to take care of than a dog.
There are fixtures of the front room, filled with bright light and piles of paper.
I moved into this flat when I was 31 years old, and I'm now 80. And I remember when my parents visited me here, they climbed up here and they said, it's a hovel, it's a fire trap. My father said that. So I love to speak of my hovelesque existence.
Hovelesque. Only a few minutes with Menashe and the wording begins.
You see, I work very closely with words. Every word counts.
Samuel Menashe was born in Brooklyn, but he grew up in the Bronx and Queens. As a student, he memorized poetry. Carl Sandburg was a favorite of his, but he didn't think much about writing it. Menashe studied biochemistry in college. He served in World War II, and he's lived in Lower Manhattan, Soho, for most of his adult life.
Psychologically, I'm so stuck here. It hasn't been painted in 25 years because I'm afraid of bringing a painter in here. It's so crowded. What would happen to the... You know, this just happened by accident, by stupidity of not finding a decent apartment when I could have found one. But that's how it is. I'll give you one of my domestic poems. At a standstill, that statue, that cast of my solitude, has found its niche in this kitchen where I do not eat, where the bathtub stands upon cat feet. I did not advance. I cannot retreat.
With Menashe, the poetry just pours out.
I've been at, I think, more than one occasion for drinks or dinner where Samuel has just begun reciting Baudelaire in French, or, you know, I mean, he really is kind of a poet head to toe.
David Yezzi, executive editor of the New Criterion, met Menashe when Yezzi first moved to New York. He was waiting tables at the Boathouse in Central Park.
There was this man with kind of silver hair talking to a younger man at one of my tables, and they were looking at a little poem they clipped out of the New Yorker, and just started talking to them about that, and I was introduced. This was the poet Samuel Menashe, and I had heard about him only a couple of weeks before. Somebody said, if you like poetry, the poet that you should really check out is Samuel Menashe, and then I wound up running into him.
Which maybe wasn't so surprising. If you're involved in the poetry world of New York, says Yezzi, Menashe, he gets around. He goes to readings, he gives readings.
I recite. I don't read. And I'm sometimes, there's an attempt to entrap me. Are you going to read any new poems? I say, why? Do you know all the old ones by heart? I mean, they're constantly checking up on you.
But if he's such a fixture, how come his contemporaries, John Ashbery, James Merrill, Adrian Rich, Galway Canal, how come they're so much better known?
I have a medieval image. They are abbots in monasteries and visit each other, and I am a hermit outside the walls of the establishment.
His tight, carefully crafted poems have won wide praise in the UK, but he's had a hard time even maintaining a publisher in the United States.
I don't dwell on it. I mean, a beautiful day makes me happy. I'm not constantly consumed with the fact that I have been treated like an outcast, particularly in this country. But my poems are very concise. The struggle is against words, words, words. And I've had a hard time because I've been dismissed as slight. You know, they're too short.
Poems can't be too short.
Christopher Ricks, professor of humanities at Boston University and the professor of poetry at Oxford, he edited Menashe's latest book.
Too short for what? I mean, too short to make one feel one has done a hard day's work, though the poet may have. The price paid for their being so short is, I think, that people sometimes read too many of them at a run or at a trot. It then feels as if you've been having canapé or something instead of a square meal. If you'd eat it and stay with it and walk round it and look at it through 360 degrees. There's a lot going on in these glinting little things. I think it's good not to sit down to read consecutively lots of pages of poems. I mean, he writes beautifully about dipping, you know, prowse, dip, nibbling. And that's what readers of books ought to do. You ought to dip and nibble.
A flock of little boats tethered to the shore drifts in still water, prowls, dip, nibbling.
What he brings out well in reading, I think, is the kind of weight that goes with compactness.
The work is compact. Menashe says making a poem is like sculpting an object from stone. He chisels away at his work, and he doesn't stop carving, even post-publication. When he was younger, he'd go home for dinner and tell his parents that he'd been working on a poem. The poem, his mother would ask, how much shorter is it? It seems he can't help but do touch-ups.
It's as if I sculpted a statue which remained in my studio, and I passed it one morning and suddenly saw I could do some more work on the head and neck.
Which is how he found himself looking back at one of his poems, The Shrine Whose Shape I Am,
has a fringe of fire, flames skirt my skin. It's, I guess you would call it a religious poem, but I'll just skip to the last stanza. I suddenly discovered that instead of I am, I had the line, thus in my bones, I'm the king's son. That ordinary colloquial contraction, I'm, was so ugly, so wrong. I caught that. And the poem had been unchanged for 20 years. I couldn't understand how I possibly could have said I'm instead of I am. Well, that's how I work. Yeah.
So, like right now, is there one in your head?
No, not right now. Now I'm taking too many medicines, trying to figure out which inhalator to take.
After 80 years, health problems have taken their toll on Menashe. Prostate cancer, heart disease, asthma.
It was nip and tuck. I thought I might die before the book came out. I have a nice poem about getting old. I wrote it when I was merely middle-aged. Salt and pepper. Here and there, white hairs appear on my chest. Age seasons me, gives me zest. I am a sage in the making, sprinkled, shaking.
Menashe lives alone, but he's busy.
Hello?
People are calling to check in.
Oh,
he's been to Los Angeles for a reading, and to Boston, too, where he was joined by Christopher Ricks.
He was reading recently at Harvard and reading extremely well and said that he would read a poem again if somebody wanted it read again. And then about two-thirds through the occasion, his eyes rolled back into the back of his head and he came with a great crash like a tree down upon the floor. And quite frankly, we all thought that he had died, since 80 is a reasonable age at which to go. Having passed out, he got to his feet and said, If anyone wants a signed copy, they'd better get it now.
I hadn't come to Harvard. They wanted to take me to the emergency room. I hadn't come to Harvard. It's a high point of my so-called career to be taken away in the middle of the reading. So they brought me some fruit juice and a few crackers, and I completed the reading, and we even went to dinner at the Harvard Faculty Club.
Years as the hermit has led Menashe to be what you might call self-reliant. He's resourceful. At his local bookstore, he's not above some rearranging. He slides Ted Hughes over to give his own book a little more space on the shelf. And when he discovers a limited stock of his book, he gives his home number to the bookseller, in case the guy wants him to bring over the few copies he has at home. Menashe had hopes that these things would be taken care of, but he's used to doing the grunt work. What poet isn't? David Yezzie says yes, it's wrong that Menashe received attention so late in life, but...
The fact is that despite the recent resurgence of interest in poetry and this kind of wave of popularity that poetry is enjoying, that it's still possible to be a poet in this country and be unknown.
So why not enjoy the day? Christopher Ricks imagines Samuel Menashe as a kind of flaneur.
A serious sort of stroller of the streets and observer of strangers. Not in some dark Baudelairean way, but in a happy, amiable, what used to be American way.
He has a strange belief in the stroll and leads himself forth each day, stopping and wandering with no goal, as if man were born to smile, not pray. He knows that grace will grace beguile. God! That's one of my early poems. And I was called a flaneur.
And most days, Menashe still takes the five flights of stairs.
I'm the oldest person in the house.
He heads out.
Beautiful day. Oh, my God.
Off into Central Park. A friend describes the park as his living room.
What a day. Dazzling.
Or at least for a walk in the neighborhood.
I have nothing to add to this day. I'll go out on the pier, and an old friend of mine, we're admiring the sunset, and she says, you should make a poem. I said, no, the sunset is enough. You don't have to make a poem. To receive the beauty of this day is a great privilege. The day is enough. Is it not?
That portrait of Samuel Menashe was produced by Emily Boutine. Tomorrow on the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, in the spirit of Samuel Menashe, we're going to hear more short poems by John Updike, the Emperor Hadrian, and even an erotic Sanskrit poem that is guaranteed to make you blush. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please let your friends know about it, and please review it on iTunes or in your favorite podcast directory. Also, let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org, or you can leave a voice message at 718-857-1821. The music used in this podcast is from the Claudia Quintet. For the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.